Wir gerne sehen, was ist los? It's deinen Freundo, Seth. I'm learning German. Yeah, in case you didn't know what that was. That is me trying to impress you with the little German that I know. Right now, I am actually learning German. I took it in high school. I goofed off the entire time. I did some other language learning apps. They taught me things like where the taxi stand is and how to find a bus, but not a lot of conversational German. Thankfully, that's what Babbel is all about. Babbel teaches you language conversationally, which, let's face it, that is what you want to know anyway. I don't know. When I was in school, you learned like how to count. You learned like the colors. You learned the shapes. Those are all important things, but they don't help you when you're in like Cologne, Germany with Ein Nierenstein, which, by the way, is German for kidney stone, an experience I can unfortunately speak personally to. But I've been using Babbel to learn to speak German again, better than I have before. I actually really like it because it is conversational. It's a little bit more relaxed. One of the things that it does that I really like is it'll sometimes show you what the literal English translation is. And I don't know why, but I find that very helpful in sort of understanding the structure, the grammar of a language, and sort of putting myself into that mind space. Since I'm only in Germany for Gamescom, which is like a week, week and a half, I'm not immersed in the German language. I'm not immersed in German culture. So what I do is the second best thing. I'm taking Babbel. Hopefully this year when I go to Germany, I'll be able to impress all the Germans with how much German I know from learning through Babbel. The app has pronunciation recognition, so you'll be able to learn how to speak better with your accent, how to actually properly pronounce the words. That way you won't get made fun of by a group of older German men because you said apple strudel and not Apfelstrudel. No, it's really cool. I'm going to say right now there is a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now you can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, because you guys are the best ones, by the way, at babbel.com/realm. Get 60% off at babbel.com/realm. That is spelled babbel.com/realm. Rules and restrictions may apply.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder. Listen.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 570 of NVC, Nintendo Voice Chat. I am your host, Per Schneider, sitting in for Casey DeFreitas this week. And we have some interesting topics for you, I hope. We're going to talk about the Switch release of Skyward Sword, go a little deeper into our play experiences. We'll talk about the Switch OLED and how the pre-orders went, plus a couple of other news items and questions from our audience. To do that, I want to introduce you to our illustrious panel of hosts and co-hosts and guests this week. First of all, we've got Jada Griffin from IGN.
Hey, everybody.
Hi, Jada. We've got, I think I'm pronouncing this right, Brain Altano.
It's Brian. Yeah.
Brian, it's French.
Yeah.
Okay. Brian, welcome. Right, yeah. And then a guest joining us last minute. Thank you so much for making it. OJ Player Essence. You've seen his YouTube channel. You probably follow him on social media. Welcome.
Or not follow me on social media. I mean, depending on what day it is.
I do. So we originally planned to do a deep dive into Skyward Sword. I had it all mapped out. It was going to be the legend of a 10, and we were going to bring back Rich George, but it fell through last minute. So we're going to have to do that episode in the future sometime. But instead, I think we assembled a pretty good panel of people who have all played Skyward Sword and may have slightly different opinions from each other. And we'll get to that in a bit. But our first topic is actually going to be focusing on how the Switch is doing out there. And I don't want to get mired in boring sales data. Tell me to stop if I go too far, as always. But Switch OLED went up for pre-order, a mere week ago. It feels like it's been a year, and it's almost out. And I wanted to check in with you guys. Did you guys pre-order? Who managed to get one? Who didn't want one?
I'll start. No, you go first, Jada.
I'll jump in. I'm still happy with my current Switch. So for this, it wasn't enough of an adjustment or an improvement for me to want to jump on the wagon and pick up a new Switch. So for me, it's really nice. It's super sweet looking. Like if I didn't have a Switch, it would have been an instant buy for me, but
yep.
With already having one that's still working just fine, it wasn't enough for me to justify.
You let all us fools jump in line first and test it out. Brian, did you order one?
I did. And I don't necessarily know why. Don't get me wrong. I'm excited for it. And I think like once it's in my hands, I'll be like, this is why I did this. But I got I got that red box Switch a couple years ago, which was a nice upgrade in terms of battery life and stuff like that. But one of the things I do remember specifically about that, and also when I got my Switch Lite, is that the system transfer process is kind of a pain. Mm-hmm. And so I'm sort of dreading that weekend of like going into the eShop and re-downloading games. There's just like a whole lot of things there. And also, and this is very specific, but I'm one of those weirdos that has like multiple international accounts on my system to be able to download demos from the Japanese eShop and European games and such. And so like, that's another thing of sort of like having to resync all those things. But I did get a pre-order in. It was not as frustrating as I thought it would be, but definitely still, you know, a little, you know, 2020, 2021-ish in terms of pre-ordering anything. But
yeah,
I don't know. I'm on the fence on whether or not I'll keep it, but I did get one in for now.
So, and OJ, were you able to pre-order one? Did you want one?
Yeah. I actually pre-ordered one. I had a live stream for it. You know, we were just trying to help people get one if they want one, because we didn't know what the type of demand was going to be, right? We don't know how much Nintendo made of these. I figured they'd make a lot, so there'd be a lot of people to get one, because it's the same, you know, it's the same SoC, right? It's the same thing. So I figured it wouldn't be in like, you know, a problem to get one, but I still had a live stream just so, just to see. And yeah, I was able to pre-order one, no problem. I wanted the white one, the one with the like off-white with the, you know, Metroid Dreads coming. So I pre-ordered that, and I have one of those, you know, the OLED TVs. I have an LG CX OLED TV.
Same
and
here,
those
yeah.
are extremely nice. And I also have the OLED PS Vita, and you can still have that today. And that's from, you know, 2011. And it looks amazing, even still to this day. And that's like a 540p screen or something like that, right? So I've always liked playing games handheld. You know, that's something that I do whenever I go to my mom's house, or if I travel, you know, sister's house or brother's. I always, you know, do that. If I go out of the country, which I do travel out of country too. So for me, it was like, yeah, I'm going to check it out, because I play portable handheld and I like OLED screens. I'm just a big fan of OLEDs ever since I saw that Vita. You know, I was like, I want OLEDs, you know, on everything. Mm-hmm. So it was cool. But I understand for those who aren't as big as that, you know, or aren't as big on it, and they want to play like, you know, dog. Like, I get that. Like, it doesn't really seem like it's going to like you need it. But for me as a, you know, handheld, I'm like a 50-50 type of person, you know. So for me, it was like, yeah, I want to get one just because OLEDs are just so nice.
Yeah, no, it's definitely for people who want to take it on the go more. And then obviously anybody foolish enough to buy all these different Joy-Con colors will want it.
Who would do that?
I don't know. Crazy people. I was able to get one. And the pre-order process, obviously pre-ordering next-gen consoles and you know, even current-gen consoles can be really tough. There's still, you know, so many people out there who just can't get a PS5 or a Series X. And obviously then Steam's new handheld went out and caused the same issues. Like when it first went up, like it felt like a trickle of pre-orders coming in, where Walmart and Target went online. Then some of their pages actually forward out. GameStop came online and then made the pre-orders power up only. So you had to pay to be first in line, which I thought was pretty shady. Mm-hmm. And then Best Buy, I thought, did a really nice job. They had this queue management system where once you signed in, it would gray out the pre-order button and say, hey, don't refresh, don't go anywhere. When new stock is coming in, we'll release it. And obviously it's not that they're waiting for confirmation on new stock. It's that all of these pre-orders being placed at the same time put a tremendous amount of strain on the you know, their order management systems, and that's why Walmart goes to 404 and Best Buy didn't. So I thought they did a really nice job, And then after the first wave was over, more came. And we've seen Amazon post a couple of times. It feels like if you want one, you know, I always say follow IGN deals. You can follow Wario 64, you know, any of these accounts focused on in-stock alerts and pre-orders, and you'll definitely get one.
Mm-hmm. I had that same sort of situation with Best Buy. And at first I was kind of like apprehensive about it because I was like, oh, this means I didn't get it for sure. But I thought that was a really good system of sort of just like graying it out for a minute and kind of verifying that there was a human behind the wheel there. I appreciated that. It was like sort of night and day compared to some of the next gen pre-orders we saw. Whether or not that's demand or whether or not just everybody was on the same page here, it was nice to have Nintendo this time around go, okay, here's when the pre-orders are going live. This is the time it's going to happen. And then just, you know, having multiple tabs open for multiple different online retailers. Because I remember specifically when they announced the Switch Lite, we were kind of in the dark for a really long time in terms of, you know, when and where that was going to go up for pre-order. And so there was a while where I was like, I want this, but I feel like if they had struck while the iron was hot on that one, they could have sold even more. But they kind of announced it and then went in the dark for a while. And then so this time around, it was cool because they announced the OLED. I think people had a couple of days to kind of process that it wasn't the Switch Pro and it wasn't this like new 4K device, but then also kind of go, maybe I do want this thing. And then they said, this is how you can get it. And so I think that was one of the smoother processes that we've seen so far in terms of console rollouts.
Yeah. And I was going to ask you guys, so NPD data came out last week as well. You know, the June numbers, obviously, for the month of June. And you should know for NPD data, it's, you know, retail sales tracking for Nintendo titles. It doesn't include the digital numbers because Nintendo doesn't feed those to NPD. But overall, you know, the Switch did well. It was the top selling console again. I don't know how many months running it's been.
33, I think it is.
It's insane. However, for the very first time, it was second in terms of dollars made on console sales, and the Xbox actually moved ahead for the month of June for the first time. Do you think that's a, you know, obviously the Xbox hardware costs more and all of that, but do you think that's a sign of things to come, that maybe now as stock for the next gen console is more readily available, people are finally buying them, and Nintendo's lead was a little bit of an artificial one in that Nintendo just was able to crank out more Switches? Or do you think this is just a fluke?
You know, I took a look at it on my channel, and I think that Microsoft, especially, they had a great E3, so that was also a help. But the issue that I see with them, and I've talked about this, is that they have, it seems, the lowest amount of systems, because they're always sold out, and they're getting outsold almost 2-1 by Sony. It's a little bit less, so, and they don't have to supply as much to Japan. Just like they're not sending as much to Japan
or anything,
not as much to Japan or anything, yet they're selling far less. So it was good to see them actually get a considerable amount of stock. If Microsoft was able to provide more stock, I think we'd see them higher up on the dollar amount charts. I think this would have happened maybe a few more times beforehand, but they haven't even been able to meet demand of the people who want one in the first place. So they were finally able to get a big stock shipment out. And that's good. That's finally good, because it always just blows my mind when I see that, because I'm like, man, I don't ever see an Xbox Series X in stores.
No.
Maybe an S sometimes, but it's usually somebody's always grabbing it, right? So the fact that they're getting outsold pretty badly by Switch in terms of just unit sales, and then also they're getting outsold by Sony, but yet they're sold out. That tells me that, okay, they really have a very low amount of systems, you know? So it was good that they actually were able to get a decent amount out to where they can get up there in the dollar sales. So that's kind of how I see it.
Yeah, and that's the ongoing story, right? Like, certainly the chipsets featured, you know, in these machines, as well as high-end graphics cards, are still not catching up to demand. We do a study every 2 years at IGN called it's a segmentation study where you look at different gamer segments and what they want. And like, PlayStation demand outstrips everything by, you know, 2x. And, you know, I think it's a sign that PlayStation could be selling way, way more units if they just kept them on store shelves. But obviously, Switch is also plays by different rules, right? The the chipsets are easier to manufacture, easier to come by for Nintendo's. I'm curious what that looks like come Christmas when demand is super high. Will Nintendo just run away with a lead there because they can make enough units and everybody else can't?
I think that that's part of it for sure. I think it's also you're looking at the Switch as a console that's thriving in terms of its life cycle, its software. If I was, you know, totally strapped for cash and I was a gamer right now and somebody said, which system should I buy a PS5? I would be like, if you really, really want one, sure, it's a luxury item. But I don't think that there's necessarily any like absolute like must have, like, and I love Ratchet, I love Returnal, I love Demon's Souls. I think those are like some phenomenal exclusive games. Phenomenal. Not to underplay that at all. I think the Xbox obviously has less of that going on, although, you know, it's got its own perks as well. But the Switch, I mean, if you don't have one, you can buy into a system right now that has like an amazing Zelda game, an amazing Mario game, Animal Crossing, Fire Emblem, all these games that will like last you hundreds and hundreds of hours, and the entry fees is considerably lower than it is with the other consoles, not including the Series S, of course, right? And so, like, I do think that that's a big part of it, is that software ultimately does sell these things. And like, there's a lot of buzz around the PS5 right now, and having it really hard to get is actually probably sort of amplifying that, because people look at something that they can't have and they want it more. But with the Switch, like, if you can walk into a store and you can get one and immediately go home and start playing some of these big games, like, that's really cool. And then, you know, you've got Metroids, you've got Pokemons, and you got all these other stuff coming out. So I do think that's it's going to continue to thrive. I don't know if it'll go 40, 50, 60 months on top, but yeah, it's had an amazing run and will continue to.
I know you guys talked about the you know, Steam's handheld console announcement last week and the prospects of how that would sell against Nintendo. And like, if you look at the past, there's one clear rule you can make about handheld gaming: the console, the handheld machine with Pokemon wins, yeah, and the runner-up will be the machine with Monster Hunter. And this generation, Switch has both, right? And so, in Japan, obviously, Monster Hunter was a huge success factor for Sony's handhelds. And I do think sales will look really, really strong in Japan based on those two factors. And then in the US, obviously, too. But just quickly from NPD as well. So Mario Golf obviously came out. It debuted at number 3. It was behind Ratchet & Clank Rift Apart on the PS5 and Black Ops Cold War. That's not counting eShop. But if you look at this, at the top 20 overall, 7 of the top 20 bestsellers last month were Switch exclusives. So just from a split, right, there were 7 games you can only play on the Switch, not on PC, not on Xbox or PlayStation. And then when you look at the year-to-date top 10, 3 of the top sellers this year so far are Switch exclusives. That's Super Mario 3D World, number 4, Monster Hunter Rise in 5, Mario Kart 8, and then in 8th, Mario Kart 8 in 8th. And then Minecraft is obviously, Minecraft is always on the list, right? That's a cross-platform seller, but gets a lot of its sales on the Switch as well. So, I mean, it's looking pretty good. And then in the UK, we saw some early data. Skyward Sword debuted at number 1. Some analysts are saying it's selling on par with the original Wii release. Now, we should note that Skyward Sword came out very late in the Wii's life cycle, so it wasn't the top seller. It wasn't lighting the world on fire like some of the earlier games for Wii were. But that's looking pretty good then, huh? Good debut for Skyward.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's, you know, even more of a testament for how well it's doing on Switch. Like, even though it came out late in the Wii's lifespan, that just meant there was that many more of an install base for owners to go out and pick up Skyward Sword. So, I mean, yes, it wasn't like a hot new pick it up with this console, like, Skyward Sword now on the Switch still isn't that, but I think it's both, they're both kind of coming out that same kind of life at that point in the lifespans for both consoles. Like, they're both kind of like mid to end console cycles. I mean, I don't know when the Switch's console cycle is going to end, but I got to imagine we're at least somewhere near the halfway point at this point. But yeah, I mean, I think it's great that Skyward Sword is still performing, even though it's, you know, not typically on the top of people's Zelda lists.
We'll talk about that a little bit more, but I'm really curious to see if the kind of the Switch boost continues with Skyward Sword, where, you know, these game re-releases are just performing as strongly as other companies' entirely new games. So one related topic, and I swear we'll stop being all businessy after this one, is Nintendo never comments on rumors and speculation, except when they just did last week, right? From the Japanese Twitter account, social media accounts from Nintendo, NCL, in English, they commented on a Bloomberg report You know, if you remember the report, Bloomberg said that the Switch OLED costs only $10 more to make than the standard model, but Nintendo is hiking it by $50, so their profit margin increases, right? They're making an extra $40 per unit. Nintendo responded via the account and said, I quote, a news report on July 15th claimed that the profit margin of the Nintendo Switch OLED model would increase compared to the Nintendo Switch. To ensure correct understanding among our investors and customers, we want to make clear that the claim is incorrect. We also want to clarify that we just announced that Nintendo Switch OLED model will launch in October 2021 and have no plans for launching any other model at this time. What do you guys think about that? That's unusual for them, right?
Very, yeah.
Visible is a wireless carrier that is not invisible. It is pretty clear from the name, actually, radio waves are invisible. And I can say this with authority as a licensed amateur radio operator. That being said, Visible won't be giving you the power to see light outside the visible spectrum. It's actually way better because having that ability would make getting around very difficult and distracting. What you do get with Visible is unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You get one line of wireless, just $25 a month, which is great in these times of economic uncertainty. That is one line for $25, taxes and fees included. So whatever you're doing at this moment, please stop. Switch immediately. Now, monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com. This year, I decided I actually wanted to like follow hockey a little bit more than just the most casual of casuals. So I subscribed to a service that streams all of the NHL to your television. The Boston Bruins home opener, I went to watch it and boom, blackout restrictions apply, which I thought was kind of ridiculous because I'm still 200 miles away from Boston. But whatever, had I had NordVPN, that wouldn't have been a problem. I would have just gone in, changed my settings to another geographic area, and boom, I could have been watching all the Boston Bruins home games like it was nothing at all. So now I have NordVPN and I can watch the home games of my local teams streaming without being frustrated. It's the same thing with like Netflix. It has all these complicated licensing rules, which from one country to another don't really make sense. So something you could watch on South Korean Netflix, you won't be able to watch on the United States Netflix unless NordVPN, boom, switch to South Korea and you're watching whatever Korean drama that you want. I highly recommend you do that. I haven't done it myself, but people seem to enjoy them. And who am I to try to bring down people's enjoyment? NordVPN, more than just entertainment and sports availability, it's going to protect you, especially when you're traveling, when you're using public Wi-Fi. People are trying to get in there. They're creeping on you. Bad actors, people trying to steal your password, your bank account details. Who knows what the government's doing these days? I can't keep track. They're all over the damn place. NordVPN. It's going to protect you. It's going to protect up to 6 devices because I know you have at least that many devices in front of you right now that can hook up to the internet. Boom. Fastest VPN in the world. You're not going to get any buffering. You're not going to get any lagging. It's going to stop your ISP from bandwidth throttling, which they do. That's kind of sneaky, especially how much you're paying those guys. There's threat protection to protect you from viruses and malicious malware and whatever else. Unsavory actors are out there. If you want to get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/NintendoVC. That's nordvpn.com/NintendoVC. Victor Charlie. That link is also going to give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There is no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nice of them, and I appreciate that.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
I mean, came out of nowhere. I started covering Nintendo professionally in 1997 or something like that. And I've placed probably hundreds of calls for comments on rumors. Like, hey, is it true you guys are working on a Star Fox game with pretty graphics, and it's like, we can't comment on rumor or speculation, like every time. And yet here they are, and they put this out. Why do you guys think they did that?
Well, they said, you know, right there with their investors and their customers, like, so I think that this was picking up a lot of traction. A lot of people, like a lot of people were making videos. A lot of people were talking about how it's like, you know, this increase, and it's, you know, so I think that they really just wanted to clarify it from maybe even also from their investor standpoint, because if their investors are thinking that, hey, this is going to be a huge thing, they're seeing like the pre-orders go sell out, and they're thinking that they're going to make so much more money off of these, right? Then that could also lead to a, you know, a false sense of profits in terms of what they're going to get. So I think that it's just like, it's a combination of like, just, you know, obviously the right information, but also like, I'm not sure if they want to set their investors up for potentially like them thinking that this is going to, you know, increase the company's net worth by like, you know, 40 billion or something like that, you know? So I think it's also that as well, you know, I mean, obviously they're making something more off of it, right? So there's probably something that's there, but maybe it's not the exact, all they have to make sure is that it's not the exact amount in terms of what Bloomberg said, and it's a incorrect report, right? So I think, you know, that's what it comes down to at the, you know, at the end. Like, it can just be off just by a bit, and it was wrong based
That's a really good point, because I actually hadn't thought about it from the perspective of them sort of like satiating investors who were looking at this and being like, wait, how much money are we going to make off this thing? Because I sort of thought of it as like, oh, we're going to put out this rumor fire that's going on right here, because there was a lot of backlash from a lot of people sort of being like, why is this $50 more than it actually is? I think there's like a lot of sort of moving parts there that got it to where it is. And the thing that like I was tweeting about the other day is that like the reason it's $350 is because they sold 85 million or, you know, something. It's around 85 million, not, you know, if you just subtract the Switch Lights, obviously it's a little less than that, at $300 of the base Switch model. And so the customers or the consumers have told Nintendo and told the market that this is a justifiable price for this hardware. And they said, okay, well, how do we like, you know, sneak in the sort of premium model here? It's also because Nintendo is one of the only hardware manufacturers in the gaming industry that historically has at least attempted to make a profit off of their hardware out the gate, whereas like the other ones generally take a loss, recoup in software and also peripherals and such. Nintendo has kind of always been like, well, this is what we're aiming for, and we want to be able to make a little bit of money off of like the Wii and the GameCube, you know, chipsets and hardware on day one. And so I think that like ultimately it's like, it's kind of icky because like none of those savings are ever passed down to the consumer, but like it is at the end of the day a business, and I hate to, like, it sounds like I'm like standing for capitalism here, and I don't want to be that guy, but like this is the video game industry is an industry. It is not a charity. It is this weird marriage of like art and business colliding in unison, and you know, there's a lot of shrapnel there sometimes, and the savings rarely get passed down to the consumer. If you look at like when games went digital, we never really caught a break there, right? Like we didn't get to save the cost of what it cost to ship a game on a truck and print it in a factory and have a beautiful 50-page color manual and a box art and stuff like that. All of that got worse. Most of it went away, and the prices stayed exactly the same. In fact, a lot of times they even went up. So yeah, that does suck, but I don't know how to fix that besides boycotting, you know, consumerism in general.
I know. But you know, the value of money also kept on going down. So yeah. So there's that. I remember when I was a kid and like a Atari computer cartridge was like what I would think is the equivalent of like $140 now, and like thinking I can never afford this stuff.
There were N64 games that were like $90, you know.
That's right.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Super Nintendo was like 85 and such.
Yeah. I remember saving up for who knows how long to get Chrono Trigger. I think it was $70 when it launched, and I felt that was like the most astronomical amount of money in my life. You know, I felt that I'd never be able to afford this.
I think I spent $79 on like Clay Fighter 63 and a third, because like I read the IGN review and I'm like, yeah, what do those guys know?
Well, we taught you a lesson there. All right. Well, thank you for your insight, guys. So now on to our next topic. So this little game came out last Friday called The Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword. And obviously it's not entirely new. I think all of you played it back in 2011 when it first came out, or maybe afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
2011.
Day one.
I don't want to make you all seem old, but obviously
I'm old.
Obviously, yeah,
same, it's okay. There's nothing I can do about it.
This is not Reed Richards cosplay.
My hair can't fall out again, so it's...
I can give you some of my beard hair and transfer it over to your head. It's okay, Brian.
Well, when you guys are done exchanging follicles, I think it's fair to say that Skyward Sword is still considered to be the most divisive Zelda game, right? Like, obviously, some people would argue Zelda 2 because it completely changed the formula. It went from action-adventure to RPG, from top-down to side-scrolling. But Skyward Sword is a very, very different game, and it's not just the motion controls. Mm-hmm. I just want to go back to 2011, just a quote from Rich George's review on IGN. He gave this game a 10-10. 10 out of 10. He said, remarkably, the Zelda game manages to reshape its control scheme, design sensibility, and pacing all at once while still telling a brilliantly powerful story featuring some very memorable characters. And he thought, and I don't know if he still believes it, but he might, he thought this was the best the Zelda franchise had been since its inception. And, you know, I think at the time he also thought that this would kind of formulate the direction of future Zelda games. What do you guys think? I don't know. Jada, you want to jump in?
Yeah, I mean, I love what they went for with Skyward Sword. I love a lot of the new mechanics, you know, the being able to roll your bombs and do different things like that. I loved like a lot of those other things. And I actually do not have an issue with the motion controls when they work well. Like for me with Skyward Sword, the whole time I'm on the ground going through dungeons, motion controls, no problem whatsoever. As soon as I have to get on a loft wing though, with those motion controls, it's just, if I have to give a point for every time I'm on the ground as Link, and then every time I take away a point every time I'm in the sky as on my loft wing, I like it evens out. Like I don't ever want to be on my loft wing, which really sucks because I really like the loft wing as a creature in The Legend of Zelda. I'd love to see more of them in future games.
I feel like we will.
So just a pro tip, because I've heard people struggling with motion controls in different places. Like for the loft wing sequences, ignore your left Joy-Con. Do all your steering with the right one. Do the flappity flappity to gain height just with the right Joy-Con. But and recenter your pointer, because my biggest issue with the motion controls is they were meant to be very mainstream and accessible, right? Like the sword moves the way that you move your hand. But in reality, it's super finicky because you have to constantly reset your center point, right? You've seen it like when you use the wind bag, the best object obviously in the game. Like you get off center very quickly, and as you're vacuuming, suddenly you are pointing off screen somewhere in order to center yourself, and you have to constantly recenter. The other thing is the rhythm part of the combat. Like just swinging left and right means the enemies often block, but once you get into a groove of considering that it's a rhythm game, I think it's much easier to land those. That's my pro tip.
100% agree with the rhythm portion.
But it's, it's really hard to kind of try to remember how the motion controls felt back in the days when we first played it. Do you appreciate them more, or are you still, I'm assuming nobody here is completely in love with the motion controls. Is it still, I wish this wasn't centered around motion at all? What do you guys think?
Absolutely not. When it comes to motion controls, huh? I mean, I understand why it was there at the time I played it. And it's like you said, like the flying, it just, the most simplest things seem to be an issue at times. Either it was like extreme waggle, which could still be whatever, but I appreciated what they tried with the Wii Motion Plus. Like I appreciated it, but overall it just felt like it was just finicky. You know, it felt like it was just finicky. It felt, when I was playing it back then, I can remember perfectly like what I was doing and what was going on at that time and everything. And I was excited, but I had fun. Like when you slash and like you hit somebody, it feels good. But then it's like all the other things, you know, like Jada was talking about, it's like all the other things that just kind of like when you're trying to just roll a bomb or when you're trying to just do certain things that should be very simple to do. And it turns into like an event for some reason, because it's motion control. So I think they went a little bit too ham on them. They went a little bit too much with the motion, with everything. It should have just been the sword stuff. Then everything else you can probably just do like just by pressing buttons. But they went you got to do this by motion. You got to do this by motion. You got to do this by motion. Like everything was about motion for some reason. And there was no need for that. They could have just done the sword stuff by motion and everything else could have just been buttons, in my opinion, at least. So I'm glad that this new version came out, you know, because I played and beat Skyward Sword twice so I can play the extra mode that you get afterwards. But I didn't, it's definitely on the lower end of my 3D Zeldas. But that might be changing once we kind of get into
Are you playing with button controls now or motion controls?
I'm playing with button controls 1000%.
And oh, really?
I'm having considerably more fun. And it's already starting to jump above, like, this was probably the lowest in terms of 3D Zelda games for me. It was below Majora's. I mean, I know people love Majora's Mask, but for me, it's just not there. So
same
it's
here.
Actually,
I feel crazy because I get a lot of backlash from people about that because that's not even close to my favorite Zelda.
No hate to the Majora's Mask people out there. Mm-hmm. Seriously, no hate to you guys.
Yeah.
But it's now jumping above Majora's Mask for me, and it's like knocking on the door of maybe like Twilight or something because of the button controls now, and the game just first 60 frames per second Zelda game. I mean, as well, that double the frame rate to me really makes a big improvement in the rhythm of the game. Cause I have tried out the motion controls, you know, they do work sometimes and I think it's smoother, but the button controls for me.
I started with the stick controls and then went back to motion controls just for kind of like just for memory's sake. And then I do have to say, like, when you fight some of the more advanced enemies, like a Beamoth statue, like it just feels good to do those like horizontal swipes and then the stab stuff. I dig all that, but like my hand gets tired.
Right. Yep. Yeah. I mean, so man, I don't want to be like super negative on this because I'll just say, like, from the jump to backtrack on what Rich George had said in his original review, the 10-10, and I will say that's probably one of the IGN reviews I've disagreed with the most. Just because I think that, like, and no offense to Rich, like I he's completely entitled to feel his way. And I'm glad he was passionate about this game. And I completely understand why this game connected with so many people. And it does feel very hit or miss in terms of, like, there are people that played this game entirely with motion controls and it was, you know, surreal and magical for them. And I do not ever want to take that away from them. But my perspective on this game is that it was sort of a inherently flawed premise from the jump. I mean, the entire concept of building a Zelda game around these motion controls and knowing from the jump that they didn't necessarily work super well, to the fact that this game starts you with 6 hearts instead of 3, because they immediately out the gate go, there's going to be a trial and error here. There's going to be scenarios where the new players are getting pushback from the systems that we put in place, where they're not clicking and connecting with what's going on here. It's also like, he is correct. Skyward Sword is an incredibly important and influential Zelda, but not necessarily in the ways I think we thought at the time. This is a game that forced Nintendo to kind of break the mold of what Zelda could be. This is probably the most linear Zelda game in terms of, like, you don't even have like a Termina, a Hyrule Field. Like, there's really nothing like that. It's a lot of very narrow, self-contained areas that open up into some incredible dungeons. There are some of the best dungeons in the series are in this game. But I think that, like, Nintendo backtracked off of the premise of this game so hard that they scrapped motion controls outside of aiming. They ditched dungeons for Breath of the Wild, and they made the most open Zelda game that they've ever made, which is interesting because this game launched within the same 3 or 4 weeks of games like Skyrim, which I think that, like, something like Breath of the Wild has a lot more in common with Skyrim than it does Skyward Sword, interestingly enough. And so I'm attempting to play this game again now, and I immediately got pretty frustrated with the motion controls. I gave it as much as I could. And then I jumped over to the stick and button controls, which I do think work a lot better, but still, like, you sort of lose a little bit of immersion there. And I do find that decision to map the camera to holding L to then move the camera, it is just like something that my brain 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 hours in, and I'm still struggling with. And I want to keep pushing forward because there's so much good in this game and there's so many quality of life tweaks that they did this time around. But I think that, like, no matter what you do with this game, it's still buried in the fact that the original premise is sort of inherently flawed.
It's a puzzle game, right? Like, out of all of the, and obviously some of the DS games, the touch games were more puzzle oriented than exploration, but, like, I think they struggled, first of all, with technology, because when you're flying over the main island and you jump off your bird, you're not experiencing a connected world. It fades out and then fades in and lands you on the world, right? Like, it's not a true open world game, and everything, there's some non-linear elements. Like, you go back to areas you explored, and you can obviously see the hook shot targets and things like that early, but ultimately it is much more it's similar to the later Uncharted games, where there is some sort of hub concept, but ultimately it's a progression of a story with levels, which is different from the series. By the way, like, you guys are all talking about motion controls, and like, I totally agree, by the way. Like, I actually think I like this game a lot better than the old one because I have the camera controls now that we didn't have the second stick on the Wiimote, obviously. And I do think the Switch, having the free camera control, it adds a ton. And that's why I also like the motion control mode better, because I have instant access to it. But if you want to know whom to blame for the motion controls, I found in an old IGN interview, Aonuma says that Katsuya Iguchi, the director of Wii Sports Resort at the time, showed him the sword fighting game in Wii Sports Resort and said, you'd be crazy not to use this in a Zelda game. Like, this is the future. This works. You should use this. And obviously in that game, you're not exploring in 3D and constantly turning. It's all very linear, right? Like, it's on a line, and it works much better in the end. But yeah, Iguchi set Aonuma on a track where, back in 2011, Aonuma said, "I honestly think we cannot go back to button controls now. So I think that these controls will be used in future Zelda titles too." that definitely didn't happen, did it?
Right. That was like when they were like, "Oh, if Resident Evil 4 gets ported to other systems, I'll cut my head off." And it's like a famous video game quote that mean anything. Mm-hmm.
There was I eat my hat, a quote from some dev as well, right? Yeah. But do you guys think Skyward Sword is creatively a dead end for the Zelda series, like never to be repeated? Obviously, we're seeing elements of the controls in VR games now, right? Like, all of the stuff in like Metroid Prime 3 and Skyward Sword, like all of the kind of like puzzles where you turn things, that's all like staple in VR games now. But do you think Zelda is done with that? Or do you think in some way Skyward Sword is still a stepping stone for future games and you can feel the influence?
I mean, there's a lot of influences from Skyward Sword that, you know, already we've seen in Breath of the Wild, you know, the stamina meter, the sailcloth, which is just an extension of the leaf from Wind Waker. And I'm sure it was in other ones prior to that. That was, you know, became the paraglider in Breath of the Wild. There's a lot of stuff that, you know, Skyward Sword kind of walked so that, you know, Breath of the Wild could run. And I'm not a huge Breath of the Wild fan. I'm probably like, Breath of the Wild is very low on my list for Zeldas personally. And it's just because, like, Brian was saying, it's more Skyrim than Zelda. And that's just, I'm not a big open world sandbox, just go find stuff. Like, I want my dungeons. I want my narrative. I want my music. And that's one of the things I love about Skyward Sword, is it has all of those main Zelda staples. And that's what I crave when I want to play a Zelda game. I want my dungeons. I want that great music. I want those puzzles and stuff like that. I mean, Breath of the Wild had great puzzles with the shrines and stuff, but I want those, you know, that strong sense of narrative as well. And I think, you know, I think motion controls probably aren't going to live on from Skyward Sword in a massive, meaningful way. We'll probably see nods to it in future installments, but I think the other things that, you know, Breath of the Wild or that Skyward Sword did, we're already feeling the effects of, and we're going to see more of that in the future.
So let's say you are Aonuma now and you look back at the Zelda series. Like, I almost feel like Zelda has done it all, right? Like, we've done open world, 2D, 3D, time travel between days, which is one of the best Zelda games, and years, multiplayer, transformations, horses, boats, trains, birds, motion controls, climb everything.
Touch screen.
Where do you go next? Crossbow. Where do you go next?
Dinosaurs.
Dinosaurs.
We go dinosaurs. We haven't had dinosaurs.
No. Had Star Fox Adventures. That's probably as close as you'll get to a Nintendo dinosaur Zelda game.
No dinosaurs yet. But it looks like they're trying to take what they did with Skyward Sword, and you can see some of the influence with Breath of the Wild too. From the very beginning, it looks like they're going to put So like just the stuff that was just like flying through the sky, like just that right there. So I think they're going to take some of that stuff. I think they're going to add in some of the things that Jada was talking about. So I think that right now at this point, it's take what worked, right? Breath of the Wild, best-selling Zelda game of all time. It's my favorite just because I like, I'm not necessarily in love Same. With super open world, but it's just the way that they did it, the innovation that it brought to the table. Take that base and then add in the stuff that people want, and then you get the even better product. Add in those dungeons, better ones, add in that sky stuff. Flying around in the sky is just cool. It's just a dope thing to do. And yeah. if you do that, you even get, and then add the intrigue. Like, what the heck is going on with Link, right? They added intrigue to his, like, his body, something's happening. And you have a game that can even beat the first Breath of the Wild, which would be, you know, nuts. And that game is already really good in most people's eyes. So I think that's the future, just kind of reiterating on what was great, but then adding in some extra things for intrigue, and then just kind of go from there, see where that takes you, you know?
Yeah. Excellent. It's tough, right? Because, I mean, just you listen to this panel right here, and it's like everybody has a different perspective on what Zelda should be. Everybody has their favorites. I absolutely love Breath of the Wild. I wish it had dungeons in it. Like, I would rather take, like, sort of, like, I cut the amount of shrines in half and then put some of those resources into making, like, 6 or 7 sort of more bespoke dungeons. Because the, you know, like, the four big sort of pillars of that game weren't, they were sort of dungeony, but not necessarily. Whereas a lot of people hate the you know, weapon durability stuff. I personally didn't mind it. I thought it became a non-issue towards the second half of the game, but that's why, like, there are definitely, like, notes of Skyward Sword that I wish would carry forward in the future. The bizarre, you know, weird esoteric control scheme not included, because I do feel like even with button controls, even with motion controls, like, it is a little bit of sort of like, you know, walking and chewing gum, scratching your head, patting your stomach at the same time. It never, like, totally feels like, it always feels like you maybe need, like, a third joystick or a motion controller on your head or something like that. And again, there are people that it works perfectly for them, and power to you. I'm so glad you're enjoying this game, but I found myself, like, switching between these schemes very often. And I don't think it's, like, it's not a shock that, like, this took inspiration from Wii Sports, because I think that's what they were going for, right? Yeah. They were trying to make a sort of bigger, meatier game for that, like, very casual Nintendo Wii audience, which obviously had some hardcore players within it, right? There are a lot of really great Wii games. But there are a lot of people that, like, they got the Wii to go bowling, and then we, you know, they got Wii Sports Resort. And this felt like sort of a giant experiment in that sort of department. But there's a lot of really cool stuff in this game. And so I'm glad that people are getting to sort of play it for the first time or the second time. I'm glad that it's getting a second chance out there in a lot of people's hearts and minds. I still don't think it's going to, you know, ever crack my top 5 Zeldas or anything like that.
Right.
But I'm glad it's here again, and I'm glad that they cut a lot of the fat. I hate dowsing so much.
Everybody hates dowsing.
I wish it wasn't there.
I'm at the Lanayru mine. I just finished that whole area and the you know, the temple after that. And I'm having a ton of fun with it. Like, I love the concept of a Zelda game as a puzzle game. Just the idea of knocking down a Skulltula and having to upward swipe to flip it. Like, that sort of, like, discovery of puzzle play, I think, is really strong. And there's something about cutting, like, branches and being able to slice them multiple times that just feels right. I really like that stuff. But hey, it's a really interesting experiment, and we're unlikely to ever see a game of this scale with this sort of control scheme again. But if you want more Zelda Skyward Sword discussion, you can actually put the Master Sword back in the pedestal, and you can go back to episode 133 of NVC, where in our Zelda spoiler cast, you hear Rich, Sam, and Audrey in 2011 talk about their first impressions of the game. It's a pretty good listen, because it was such a big disruptor of a game. And so I think the reception was very, very different back then. And maybe also the kind of idea of what games would look like in the future. With that, I want to move on, and I want to check in with everybody, you know, outside of Skyward Sword. I want to check in what you're playing. And I know, Jada, you jumped into Pokemon Unite. How's that going?
It's actually pretty good. I was a little skeptical. I'm a huge League of Legends player. I've been playing since beta back in, like, 2009. But I saw the trailer, and I was like, this looks pretty cool for, you know, I love Pokemon, so like this looks like an interesting kind of in between, and it's great. It's so welcoming to newcomers to MOBAs in general. I think, you know, a lot of Pokemon fans, there's probably a good portion of Pokemon fans that have never played a MOBA or know what a MOBA is. But this 5-on-5, just, you know, working with teammates to, you know, dunk Pokeballs into your opponent's hoops. It really just kind of, it grabbed me. And, you know, I sat there playing a couple matches yesterday and I really liked it. You know, the tutorial is very straightforward and teaches you about, you know, defeating neutral monsters or Pokemon. And then, you know, you level up as you go through, you Pokemon learn new moves, you evolve, which, you know, and then you get to upgrade your moves. And you really, you know, it echoes that you need to work as a team. I started with Eldegoss, the grass supporter, because I know that a lot of people are going to be playing this game for the first time. And so, like, yes, I could play a heavy hitter like a Charizard and try to carry, but it's more of a very much a team game. You've got to work with your allies. And so Eldegoss allowed me to go around and heal my allies constantly, knock up my opponents so that my allies could do more damage. I gave them a chance to have the spotlight, and I still walked away with an MVP in my first match, which was great. It was a great feeling as a support character to have the highest points in a MOBA game, which isn't very common in most MOBAs. But yeah, it's great. And there's an excellent roster of characters to choose from right off the bat. There's some microtransactions and stuff if you want custom outfits for your Pokemon. I haven't dived too much into that yet. And then they also have held items, so where you can kind of customize, you know, health regen, bonus attack, movement speed, all types of different things. It's surprisingly deep, but very easy to get into.
Nice. OJ, you kicked the tires on this yet?
Yeah. I played yesterday, and I had a lot of the people, you know, my subscribers play with me. And yeah, I echo what Jada said. It's amazing. It's really good. I'm surprised. Like I'm surprised on how good it is, because I don't like MOBAs, and I've tried everyone that's came out. I don't like League. I don't like Arena of Valor. I don't like any. I just don't like them. They just seem generic to me. They just seem like I'm just playing these little things running around. But with Pokemon, it's something that I know, right? It's something that it's been around forever. But there is some depth to the game. I was using Cinderace, and Cinderace is such a good mid-range, like, to long-range character. It just, like, kicks the ball. It's like, you know, like Messi or whatever. It's like he's like a soccer star on there. So it's really fun to play with some of the characters. And we were having a great time. We were getting kind of cooked at the beginning. When we started playing 5-on-5, we were getting kind of beat badly, but then we started getting better and working together. Then we started really winning. Then I started getting some of the MVPs and everything, and I had a ton of fun. Even when we were losing, I was still having fun, just learning how to play and upgrade the character and getting into, like, what a MOBA is. Because all the same little rules apply, but things are just kind of done a little bit differently. And yes, dunking is cool. I like the fact that you dunk to get the points. There's just something that feels satisfying when you get that dunk and it's like a big, like, 50 points, or it's like a good, like, 20 point dunk or something like that. This feels great. So yeah, very surprised. And it's cool that it came to Switch first. They said, hey, it's coming to Switch first, then it's coming to mobile later. It's going to have crossplay and all that, you know, so that's great. And also been playing Monster Hunter Stories too. That game's awesome too.
Yeah. Yeah. We talked about that a bunch. You know, obviously Casey is probably not sleeping and playing that game.
She really likes Monster Hunter.
Yeah. She gets deep into it. Brian. Yeah. Brian, you played Boomerang X, right?
Yeah, I don't know if you all have heard of this game, but I think it just came to PC and Switch, and it's sort of like this arena shooter, but it's a first person game where you are you get a boomerang, and it slowly upgrades, and then you start getting more and more powers, and you get a lot of sort of mobility and verticality. So you become this character that can basically throw a boomerang into the air and then teleport to where that boomerang is and then land, and then you get double jumps. So there's a lot of, like, sort of like first person, almost Metroid Prime-ish traversal that funnels into these arenas where there are, like, you know, hordes of enemies and monsters and awful spiders and bats and such, and you have to throw your boomerang, and then you can also click a button to bring it right back to you. So it feels very Nintendo in that it's got a very sort of simple presentation, a simple premise, but it has this kind of gameplay hook that consistently evolves and builds upon itself. Like, Nintendo's really good at saying, here's this pitch for this sort of mechanic, and what's the most we can get out of it, right? That's like a very traditional sort of approach they have to game design. I've always appreciated that. And I feel like this game does a really good job of that. It sort of has this simple set of rules that it consistently builds upon to the point where you are like teleporting and double jumping and triple jumping and boomeranging in the air and hopping all over the place. And it's chaos. And it's super, super fun. And it's really, really clever. The game's pretty short. So, you know, it's not necessarily like the kind of thing that overstays its welcome. It is $20 for something you will be able to complete in, you know, just a few hours. You can go back and do other stuff, obviously. But yeah, I give this one a chance. It's an indie game. It just launched recently. I feel like it got a little bit of buzz, but a lot of people slept on it. So yeah, check out this game. It's super, super cool. I believe there's also motion control stuff in it too, if you're looking for more stuff to flail your Joy-Con around after Skyward Sword wraps up.
I was just about to ask if you're playing with motion controls.
Yeah, that's definitely an option.
That's not an option for Brian, though. I started playing a game that does not have motion controls. That's Cotton Reboot. The full name is Fantastic Night Dreams Cotton, which is a remake of a... God, when did it come out? Ages ago. It was on the X6800 Sharp computers in Japan. You know, a classic... If you know Parodius from Konami, right? Like the kind of whimsical take on Gradius style, R-type style shooters where you have anime cutscenes and fun characters and for some odd reason, always Easter Island statues in some fashion. So it's that sort of a game. You're playing as a witch on a broomstick and you're just firing just bullets and beams and everything. The entire screen is filled with stuff. It is... it is bullet helly, but it's not a difficult shooter. So if you're into shmups, it's a pretty good one. I remember playing it on the old Sega arcade boards back in Japan when it first came out. You know, Cotton obviously was pretty well known over there, and this re-release has upgraded graphics. They changed some of the gameplay elements, like you kind of amplify your shots through shooting through crystals now. And it also includes the original game. Only thing is it's $40. So, you know, it's a shmup. If you're into that genre, if you love side scrolling shooters, it's worth it. But at $40, obviously it's a high price for a shooter like that. OJ, are you playing any other new Switch games that we need to know about?
That's pretty much it. I've been playing Monster Hunter Stories, been playing Skyward Sword. Those are kind of the new ones. You know, and Neo, The World Ends With You, Neo 20 comes out, you know, soon. So I know I'll be playing that. But there's a lot of games. There's definitely a lot of games when it comes to Switch and when it comes to just stuff in general. So yeah, those are kind of what I'm focusing on right now. I do have the Boomerang game that you're talking about. I have a review code for that and I want to get into that. So I kind of want to check that out when I can, because it does look really, really cool. It's just, I've just been overloaded. There's just been so many games coming out, man. I'm just only one person, so I can't play everything, but yeah, it's been a lot.
And Jada, I know you're playing No Straight Roads, but we only have a couple of minutes left. So I wanted to get to some of the question block questions from our fans.
Let's do it.
Let's see. From Patrick Coppins, how would you fit Groose into Breath of the Wild 2? He's too great to never see again.
Can we put him as a statue in the form of a tombstone?
Ooh. I thought the exact same thing. I don't know. That's exactly where my brain
went. Oh, no.
That is so dark.
Well, there's a lot of like remnants of old Zelda games in the Breath of the Wild lore, right? Yeah.
Well, look, he in the NVC podcast group on Facebook, which you should join because there's great people there. There was a discussion around how he's basically Biff from the Back to the Future series, but in the Zelda series. So maybe there could be, maybe he could just jump out of a flying horse cart with gull wing doors and arrive in that timeline. Please don't do that.
I mean, maybe he's got kids, grandkids.
What if they had like a. Like there was one of those big sort of tentacle guardian things in Breath of the Wild 2, but one of them just had like this orange faux hawk.
And there you go.
Is that him? Or, like his soul's in there.
It could, the it could just be a
the pompadour,
a bird. Just make him a bird. And then a question from Marshall, who writes in a lot, so I want to make sure that we read another question from him. He says, as a Metroid autistic fan, I checked out the 7 facts you didn't know about Metroid by Brian, and it was very good. I agree. That was an awesome video.
Thank you.
He added another a fact. He said, Metroid Prime Federation Force, which we do not speak of, Marshall, teased Prime 4. In one of the missions, you destroy a Metroid breeding facility while escaping with a Metroid egg. In the secret ending, Psylux has the Metroid. My question is, are you okay with more characters in Metroid? It's frustrating to me when people think Metroid is just Samus. There are lots of characters in Metroid that you can merchandise and talk about that's not just Samus. It makes me sad that Samus doesn't have friends. If Mario and Link can have wonderful friends and friends that are relatable, why not Samus? What do you guys think? Would you like to have an expanded roster like they tried with Federation Force, obviously?
I mean, Samus has Ridley. I mean, Ridley's kind of a friend, right?
Oh, best friend. Ridley ate her parents.
Yeah.
Friends like that who needs enemies?
Not a good friend. But then again, it might be relatable to people because a lot of times, sometimes people aren't really nice to other people. So I mean,
that is true. That is true. So I liked what they did, not necessarily friends, but I liked what they did with the sort of cast of bounty hunters and Metroid Prime Hunters for DS.
Yes.
I thought there were some really cool designs there. I'm a big fan of like the bounty hunters from Empire Strikes Back and stuff, even though they're only in that movie for like 4 seconds, have a bunch of their toys because I'm weird. I love that whole idea of just having this like nefarious, evil group of different bounty hunters from different planets and stuff like that. I don't necessarily want her to have friends, but that also feels like a mean thing to just be like, I don't want you to have friends. You know, like that's kind of crappy to say to anybody. So,
I mean, Ripley had Hicks, right? And Newt.
Yeah.
And what happened to them?
Bad things happen to people's friends in scenarios like that. So I guess if that's what you want, I mean, maybe Samus can have friends, but they'll die. Is that what people want?
Well,
I don't know.
You know, Nintendo said, or the lead designer said, that this game, the next Metroid game, will wrap Samus's storyline. But he doesn't mean that she dies or that there's new characters. I'm sure there's more. And he even said that. He said, of course, there'll be more Metroid games. Obviously, Prime 4, there's this myth that game is in development. Have you guys heard about that?
Apparently, sort of they're going to remaster the logo that they showed us like 5 E3s ago. Yeah. So that'll be good. Pop that on screen.
I'd be up for some more characters in that franchise if it works for Alien.
I think one of the big things about Metroid as a series is that feeling of being isolated. That feeling of alone is kind of like, you know, one of those things that's kind of pushing you forward, and it's one of the things that separates it from the other Nintendo franchises. Just about every other Nintendo mascot has, you know, a group of friends or, you know, a ragtag group of characters that they interact with regularly. And Samus has always just been like, I'm on my own. I gotta do this. Nobody else is gonna do it. So I like that. I like that she's, you know, kind of that solo heroine of the whole mythos and everything in there.
Real quick, who's the lady from Metroid Prime 3 that can shapeshift? You guys know who I'm talking about? Metroid Prime 3. Like, you know how there's a lady that can actually like that can change. Like she turned into Samus like for like a little prank at the beginning of Metroid Prime 3. But anyway, they need to bring her back. And
All
she
right.
needs to be involved in this story. I think she ended up dying, but somehow bring her back. And she needs to be involved in the series going forward because she's awesome. Like Metroid Prime 3, all those characters that you ended up fighting, they're all cool in Metroid Prime 3. So yeah, I'd like to see Samus get started.
And they're so fondly remembered that we all remember their names.
Metroid Prime 3 is my favorite Prime game, so I just remember.
I'm on the wiki right now. Rundus, Gore, Gondrida.
See, everybody knows.
Yeah, she's
totally
like
normal names.
Pondobaba.
Yeah, you're thinking of Gondrida, I guess.
Yes, bring Maybe. Her back, please.
Okay. Bring her back.
All right, yes. I'm writing a letter to Nintendo right now. Dear Nintendo, but speaking of friends, that was a wonderful discussion. Thank you, everybody, for joining NVC. We are out of time for this week. But if you, obviously, if you want more NVC, there are 569 other episodes you can chase down on podcast services from Apple to Spotify. You can watch our YouTube videos. We don't have that many, but you know, we post them every week on IGN Games on YouTube and obviously on our website. If you want to write to us, email us at nvc@ign.com and we'll try and respond to your questions in our weekly question block post or interact with you on the NVC podcast forums, of course, as well. Everybody, thank you so much for joining. We really got to wrap it. Where can people find you when you're not on NVC? Jada?
You can find me on Twitter at Jade Arena, and you can also find me in the IGN comments section since I'm the community lead.
There you go. And Brian?
You can find me on Twitter at Agent Bizzle. I'm also on a bunch of different IGN shows all the time. So you know I'm old. You know me by now.
And OJ?
You can find me on YouTube, Player Essence on YouTube, and also on Twitter at Player Essence.
Thank you so much for joining. Thank you, Logan, our NVC assistant, for helping with the show. And remember, NVC is the only place that you can...
Get the thing.
Oh, my God. You got it.
We got it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new. Or perhaps something very... very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.